This time on Watchers of Tomorrow, we are kept in suspense over the murder of King Duncan. Will Macbeth's crime be discovered?
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Watchers of Tomorrow. I am Gepwin, and I am joined, as always, by my friend Dr. Izzix.
Hi.
And this week we watched The Conscience of the King, original Star Trek. It's a weird one. This is a weird one.
Yes. And, we'll get into the details later, but there's a reason I was giving a little bit of a thing about Macbeth there for the intro.
Yes. Well, obviously the title is a Shakespeare reference. I believe that was Hamlet, though.
Yes, well, that also shows up. So
yes, it's a very Shakespeare-heavy episode.
So if you're not into theater, I'm not sure what we're going to do for you.
Though I suppose, thankfully, even though William Shatner came out of a Shakespearean background, he doesn't get any Shakespeare lines. We can count our blessings for that one.
Well, maybe he was looking for something different, you know? Like, I've already done Shakespeare. I've done every line. I recited every passage. I've done all the rhymes and the rhythms and the beats. And I've even sword fought a few times. And, oh no, I'm now dead again because I've been stabbed by Mercutio or something. Right now, it's the reverse. Now I'm Mercutio and I'm dead.
Oh, this episode we have slightly more guest stars than usual, but they don't, not all of them show up very often.
It's like, oh, this random guy over here.
Yeah. We have Arnold Moss is kind of the main guy. He is playing the actor Anton Caridian, famous Shakespearean. We have Barbara Anderson, who is playing his daughter Lenore. We have a lot of relatives in this episode, actually.
Yes.
Willem Sargent is playing Dr. Thomas Layton. And Natalie Norwick is playing Martha Layton, his wife. Finally, we have a reoccurring character.
Oh no, who is it? Is it someone we love and have missed and wish would come back?
If you like really bad Irish singing.
Forsooth, it is once again Kevin Riley.
Yes, Bruce Hyde as Lieutenant Kevin Thomas Riley, who you should remember as the singing man who takes over and tries to destroy the ship in Naked Time.
So, sort of mentioned later in the episode that, at one point, he's going to view this as being punished. Well, given that what he did previously, it's about time, right?
Yeah, should be. We'll get to that because I don't understand his character arc. This is the last time he shows up, though, so I guess he doesn't have much of a character arc.
Well, I guess he gets stuck where he ends up and then just never leaves there forever.
Yeah, I guess that would work out.
Yes, but spoilers for the episode. So.
Well, I guess if we're spoiling things, we may as well just jump in.
Yes.
We open on a knife as it is plunged into a man's chest.
Oh no, murder already?
Yeah, but it's okay. It's not murder, it's Shakespeare.
Oh, okay. It just happens to contain a lot of murder.
Yes, we are watching, as the captain is watching, Macbeth put on by some unknown players. At the minute, a man we've never seen before who was wearing an eye patch tells Kirk to watch Macbeth closely because he believes that this is, in fact, Kodos the Executioner.
Oh, no. Wait, this isn't The Simpsons, but this is Kodos, the guy whose name maybe inspired The Simpsons for the name Kodos.
Possibly. I don't know. It was weird. We then fade to credits. So this was apparently... Apparently, we maybe are supposed to just get from the name Executioner, this is probably a bad person.
Yes. Giorgio, the murderful is probably a bad person, too. Though it doesn't quite have the ring to it, really.
Captain's log, the Enterprise has been diverted to meet a Dr. Thomas Layton, who has invented a new synthetic food that will totally end famine on a nearby Earth colony.
Sweet. Seems like a radical thing that will change the galaxy forever, and everyone will be able to live in paradise, and everything will be happy, and no one will ever be short on food. Hooray!
Except Layton was lying.
Dang it, Layton!
This was just a ruse to get the captain to come look at this actor who he believes to be Kodos. But Kirk believes Kodos to be dead, even though they never identified Kodos's body. We still have gotten very few details, but they keep talking like we know who this Kodos person is.
It's sort of, I guess, an in media res sort of view of things here.
I like that they want to try to do in media res. Mm-hmm. I really do. But every time they do this, they keep talking about this character like we should know everything about them until about halfway through the episode and then just give us a massive info dump.
Yeah.
This is not the right way to do this.
Yeah, we need somebody like, say, a Riley character who's like, I don't know who this person is, though, for other reasons that doesn't quite work in this case. So.
Yeah, where are their cabbage heads? We don't have cabbage heads in this series yet. Like, the people who know what they're talking about will later in the episode ask the computer to explain it to them for our benefit.
We need a Dave Lister. We need a John Crichton. We need somebody who's just completely out of their element.
Though Dr. Layton turns to reveal that his eye patch actually covers up like half of his entire face.
That's a pretty extensive eye patch you got there, guy.
He says he'll never forget what Kodos did. There are only a few of them who actually saw Kodos in the flesh, and that he is one and Kirk is another. Layton has invited the actor to a party later so that they can get a better look at him.
So wait a moment. So Layton went to one of these theater presentations and then called up Kirk and then went again. Did he see Macbeth twice?
At least.
And why didn't he do the whole party thing, I don't know, after the first performance?
I guess so that he can get Kirk there to help identify the dude, seems like. Back on the ship, Kirk has asked the computer for some exposition about Kodos, finally.
Yay, we get information.
It is explained to us that Kodos is the former governor of Taros IV, where 20 years ago he killed half of the planet's population.
Yeah. That sounds like a terrible thing to be doing.
Kirk asks for information about the actor Anton Caridian. He is a traveling actor who has been touring with his 19-year-old daughter, but there are no records of Caridian before the death of Kodos 20 years before.
So I'm getting this weird feeling that records in Star Trek are easy to falsify.
I mean, it seems like nobody checked on this dude. So they have a full record of him lasting 20 years.
Yes.
But this person was already an adult. So this random adult shows up and goes like, I am now this actor dude. And no one asks for his backstory or additional identification or anything.
So I guess maybe in the far future it's like, well, these are a bunch of people that were born on some distant colonies. They're just kind of getting back to everybody else's sort of territories. And so I guess we don't technically have good records on them. But we should at least like note down where they came from, right?
Yeah, it seems like we've got a very Old Westy style future, I guess.
Yeah, which I guess is kind of fitting with the whole wagon train the stars sort of thing, sort of vibe that occasionally kind of comes up.
Kirk asks the computer to display pictures of both Kodos and Caridian, and they are in fact very, very similar, except for the one being older.
It's almost like they might be the same person.
Yeah, maybe this guy who looks the same and who suddenly popped into existence when this other guy supposedly died may be the same person, maybe, perhaps.
So maybe we should, like, call the cops or something like that, right?
Space police.
Space police!
Back on the planet, Kirk has decided to attend the party to get a better look at this Caridian character, but he does not show up. However, Lenore, his daughter, does, and they just start awkwardly flirting.
Yep.
We have been told this woman is 19. That is about half of Kirk's age.
Mm-hmm.
And then they go in, like, they go outside, and they start, you know, kissy-facing, and then they go in for a kiss, and then Kirk sees Dr. Layton's dead body.
Oh no, Dr. Layton!
Really kills the vibe.
Yeah, you stepped out to get some groceries or something like that in the middle of your party, and apparently you wound up dead. Oh no! Well, I guess we better call this police now and finally get things that are under control here and start an investigation proper-like.
Or we drag him back inside, where his wife, Martha, laments that Layton would not have been killed if his suspicions were not true.
Wait, well, we just started to move the body?
Yeah, they just brought it into the couch.
You guys kind of suck at this whole CSI thing.
Well, so Kirk decides to do some subterfuge stuff now. And he calls the transport ship that was going to carry the actors to their next show and tells him not to pick them up and that the Enterprise will take care of it.
Setting a trap then, Captain?
Yeah.
Putting everyone on your ship so you can just sort of arrest them whenever you need to. Brilliant, right?
I suppose. On the bridge, Spock wants to leave orbit, but Kirk says that they need to wait for a pickup. Just then, Lenore beams aboard to tell them that they have been stranded by their transport ship. And after more weird, awkward, underage-ish flirting, Kirk agrees to transport them in exchange for a special performance. Rand then comes out of a turbo lift and gives the stink eye to Lenore.
Yes, I noticed that. It's like, yeah, Rand doesn't like this lady already. She just got on the ship.
I also mentioned this because this is Rand's last production appearance.
Huh.
I don't know if she shows up later because they might have played these out of order, but this is the last time she was actually filmed in her role as Yeom and Rand.
And she was, you know, basically disapproving of what was going on, which I guess is kind of fitting with her tenure on the Enterprise there.
Yes. Spock is upset that now they have to, you know, take a bunch of actors to a new destination that is apparently 8 light years off of their course. But Kirk insists that they must do this, and he is rather rude to Spock.
All right, Kirk, it's McCoy's job to be rude to Spock. You're supposed to be kind of coy with him, not straight out rude.
I know, he's a bit like outright hostile. He's taking McCoy's lines, basically. He's just not as racist. Captain's log, Kirk is suspicious of Caridian and his daughter, but because he is horny for his daughter, he's afraid to learn the truth.
I guess you can't handle the truth?
Yeah, well, he's just thinking with his pants, I guess, like he does.
Kirk, you need to, like, for all your struggles so far in the series about Captain versus your libido, this is kind of a weird time to finally go on the libido end of things.
Kirk asks the computer for information on the eyewitnesses to Kodos. The computer gives a list, which includes himself, the doctor who just died, and Lieutenant Riley, who is assigned aboard the Enterprise as a communications officer.
Well, isn't that like a weird coincidence?
Spock says that Riley was promoted to communications from engineering, but Kirk orders Riley sent back, and when Spock asks why, Kirk, again, is very rude and snappy at him.
Remember that thing we just talked about, Kirk, where you know, Riley could be technically, you know, punished for his behavior in the naked time?
Yeah, well, apparently he got promoted for his behavior in the naked time. Like, hey, you were really good at taking over the ship and singing, so let's promote you to communications officer.
Well, maybe the thinking was that he'd be able to do less damage that way.
Possibly.
Like, now forget everything you remember about the engineering decks and just talk on the phone for a while.
In sick bay, McCoy says some weird things about the chain of command being a noose, and then Spock wants to be spared his stupid metaphors because he just came in here to ask if McCoy noticed the captain being weird.
So McCoy's like, blah, blah, blah. Spock's like, dude, you're drunk. Come on, I got stuff to do.
It's like, shut up. I just wanted to ask you a question, okay?
Yeah. We've had, you know, alien infiltrations before. The captain's acting weird. Maybe we should look into this dude.
Nope. McCoy just says he wants to have a quiet drink, and he offers a drink to Spock, but Spock says his people were spared the dubious benefits of alcohol. But McCoy says that that's why his people were conquered.
Conquered? Wait, what?
Yeah, when did the Vulcans get conquered by anyone? This is the first time hearing of this.
Did the Cubans conquer them? Was it, you know, some unknown alien race? Was it, I don't know, it was some sort of metaphor, like, conquered by logic? I don't know.
Well, we're either going to find out in the next episode or never.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure. That's one of those two. Spock thinks it is illogical to bring the actors on board, but McCoy says it's perfectly logical because the captain just has a hard-on for the dude's daughter.
It's like, hey, she's cute, you know?
Yeah.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge.
Perfectly logical because he wants to, you know, go date a 19-year-old.
Creeper he is.
On the observation deck, which is a very boring looking room, Kirk is giving Lenore a tour of the ship. And he points out a shuttlecraft that we don't get to see, but is apparently there. So we now have shuttlecraft just non-visually confirmed.
Yes. There's a shuttle over there somewhere. So I was thinking about this. So the previous episode of the Menagerie, they bring aboard a shuttlecraft from the starbase that brought Kirk and the not actual Commodore along with. So, you know, clearly they kept the shuttlecraft, and that's how they're going to get all their shuttlecrafts from now on, is stealing them from starbases.
Yeah. At least it wasn't a Talosian mirage.
Well, that's true.
Lenore sings part of the rhyme Starlight, Starbright, and comments that it is almost as old as the stars themselves. I looked this up, and the poem probably dates to the late 1800s.
It's not that old, guys. Well, come on.
You remember how all those stars popped up in the late 1800s? There was a very boring sky before then.
It seems like a weird plot to a Doctor Who episode.
That's true. Yep.
And suddenly the stars existed, and it was pretty sweet.
Actually, it's the plot of Katamari Damacy.
Oh, yeah. Gotta build your Katamaris to reestablish the stars and constellations, dude. It's also the 1800s, so hooray!
Steampunk Katamari. More horrible flirting happens. The word throbbing is used.
Yes.
Then there's some sexism and kissing.
I said there was less... but, you know, this one, but there is still some, so I didn't want to be a flat out on that one.
There's plenty of it's less so because he's at least trying to date a 19-year-old in this one instead of the 17-year-old we had a few episodes ago.
And she seems to be kind of into him, so that's good.
At least it's legal. Hooray!
Yay!
It's no longer a pedophile. It's a huge step up for Kirk.
He's learning, I guess.
We cut to Spock on the bridge. He asks the computer to correlate the history of every important person that we have seen in the plot thus far and Riley.
Mm-hmm.
He reports to McCoy that Tarsus IV faced a famine, and Kodos used his own notions of eugenics to separate out the population into those that would live and receive rationed food and those who would be summarily executed.
This guy seems like a jerk.
Yeah. In addition... they were never able to identify Kodos's body. They just found a burned corpse.
It seems suspicious. So, who burned him exactly?
Also in addition, Caridian's life history begins immediately after Kodos's death.
So, either Caridian is Kodos and is terrible at record keeping, or, you know, backdating records, or some weird coincidence just happened.
Also additionally... besides Kirk and Riley, every other eyewitness is now dead.
Very suspicious.
Also additionally, every eyewitness that died when Caridian and his actors had visited their planet.
It must be a coincidence, right?
We still can't be sure. There's no way to know. In engineering, Riley is bored.
Very bored. So bored, he calls out the rec room.
Yes. He calls the rec room and asks Uhura to play a song for him. We then get 5 more minutes of random singing.
It's all very 60s.
Why is it every time Riley shows up, there has to be some sort of singing? It must have been in his contract.
Yeah, I was going to say, contract issues?
As the song plays, we see a mysterious figure sneak into the room and spray something into Riley's drink with a plastic spray bottle.
It's kind of hilarious. It's like, is that Windex?
Yeah, well, they come up and you just expect like, oh, they're going to like drop a vial of something into his drink, all poisony. It's like, nope, squirt. When the figure is gone, Riley drinks his drink and begins to die. But he is able to call for help over the still open intercom.
Hooray, he lucked out that they stopped singing at the right moment.
Yeah, he basically saved himself because he's so bad at his job that he left an open comm line on duty. So that he could call for help later.
Just in case someone attempts to murder me, I'll just leave this open. Don't worry about it.
I'm not, like, I don't know starship regulations because they're made up. But I'm pretty sure on a military vessel, you aren't supposed to use the intercom for random personal chatter.
It's not social media, kid.
Spock tells McCoy that he has to save Riley or else Kirk will be in danger. It is the only reason to try to save Riley.
Because apparently everyone's being killed in a specific order?
Yes. If they don't get rid of Riley, they can't get Kirk, because you have to do it in a linear sequence. That's how murder works. Everyone knows that.
It's the Kill Bill theory of things here.
McCoy reports that the poison is actually a milky lubricant that they keep on board. So someone could have just, you know, accidentally put milky lubricant in a cup instead of milk, I guess.
So we got this can of lubricant here. Are you thirsty, Riley?
Spock says that that's the dumbest thing he's ever heard, and then goes to report to the captain.
Good on you, Spock, for calling bullshit.
Spock confronts Kirk about Kodos, how every eyewitness has been either killed or attempted murdered. Kirk is just still weirdly angry that Spock is doing his job and looking up things and trying to not get Kirk killed.
Could you just not protect me, dude? I want to die.
Spock asks why Kirk is tempting death, and he says, I'm not tempting death. I'm seeking justice.
No, you're not.
Well, McCoy asks if it's justice or vengeance.
Surprise, it's vengeance.
Right now, it's neither, so I don't know what... Kirk says he's not sure, that he's not sure if Caridian is Kodos, because logic's not enough. He has to feel it. You know, this mountain of piling evidence that anyone would be able to use to convict this dude is not enough because he doesn't feel it.
Kirk, you're supposed to be sort of the balance between logic and emotion here in the sort of triumvirate of the main characters there. You're going a little too much on the I need all the emotion as opposed to following the obvious clues here, man.
Or thinking at all. You know. Yeah.
I don't think the sun's going to come up tomorrow. I need to make sure I feel it, man.
Spock is again explaining that Caridian is like really definitely Kodos.
Yep.
And then they hear a phaser overloading, which is actually just this really, really annoying sound that the sound in this show is not balanced properly ever.
Yep.
So like if you have it up high enough to hear what they're saying in the dialogue, this thing just like I was afraid my neighbors were going to get woken up. So I just had to like immediately turn down this horrible whining noise.
And it gets louder and louder as it goes on.
Kirk orders that the deck be evacuated while he stay behind and look for the phaser. Great captaining.
Yep.
He's able to find the phaser at the last second and throw it into a very convenient trash bin thing that I guess ejects it into space.
Hopefully, otherwise somewhere else on the ship where they retained the garbage, it's now exploded.
Yeah. So apparently they just have, you know, shove this into space holes around the ship.
So if you ever need to get rid of records, kid, just put them in this little chute.
Yeah, space is just filled with discarded chewing gum. In Caridian's quarters, Kirk confronts him about how people are trying to kill him and his crew. He asks straight out if Caridian is Kodos. Seems a little direct from what we've seen so far, but okay.
Do you believe I am?
Yeah, Caridian just says, sure, if it pleases you, I'm an actor.
Acting!
They do have a really good line in this. His Kirk goes, what were you 20 years ago? And he says, younger.
Kind of walked into that one, Kirk.
Yes. That he's like really not acting the way someone who's just been accused of a horrible genocide should maybe be acting.
He's definitely acting suspicious, Kirk. You should be catching this and using that feeling things. You should be demanding you get all... get going here, you know, to just basically go, oh yeah, all the logic is right.
Well, Kirk has Caridian read part of Kodos's speech that they have on record so that they can compare the voice patterns, and then the computer will be able to just definitively tell him whether or not he's Kodos based on, you know, irrefutable voice comparison evidence.
That sounds brilliant. I guess if they don't have like a DNA sample they could do. And this is probably the next best thing.
Kirk apparently just, like, gets upset that Caridian knows the speech too well. Instead of waiting for the results of this test that he's apparently believes infallible, Caridian monologues about how their mechanized society has eliminated what makes men great. And Kodos really didn't do anything wrong, you know?
So finally we're getting into it, you know, maybe a little bit of moralizing, where the villain, who's obviously a mass murderer, but in disguise and, you know, wearing his Clark Kent glasses, is going, oh, yes, and, you know, this technology stuff, it's bad. Also, murdering people, it's maybe not so bad.
Yeah. Hmm? It's like, if the supply ships hadn't gotten there in time, I mean, Kodos would have been remembered as a hero.
Just so you know, just hypothetically.
Guardian keeps being weird, keeps pretty much admitting that he is Kodo straight to Kirk's face. But then Lenore comes in and accuses Kirk of being cruel. And she is angry that he was apparently just using her to get to her father. And Kirk gives that really horrible old line that he started out manipulating her to get to her father, but then he actually really did start to care about her.
So, Kirk, you're an asshole, and then you're also a fool.
Yeah, because what person doesn't love, like, yeah, I started out using you for selfish manipulative ends to, you know, basically take down someone you care about, but then I actually had feelings for you. So romantic.
I guess we're supposed to sort of interpret that as, so he's had a change of heart, and now, you know, all this, you know, talk about emotions and needing to feel is just him trying to not go after Kodos?
Yeah, is this why he's ignoring a mountain of evidence?
It's like, well, I was going to go hard, but maybe I shouldn't.
In sickbay, McCoy is making the weirdest medical log in history.
A little bit.
He says Riley is recovering, but Riley really shouldn't find out Kodos might be aboard because Kodos killed Riley's family. But of course, Riley is standing right behind him.
And it's just like, McCoy, really? Really? You're going to exposition now?
Yeah, medical log. The ensign's family was killed by a guy we might have on board ship. Oh yeah, and I guess he's doing fine, you know, medically.
Just want to make sure we get that first bit in there.
Yeah, it's really important that I say this thing that I really hope he doesn't know in the next room, where he's definitely going to be able to overhear me.
And, you know, he's definitely good enough to get up and even walk over into this room and listen to me if he really is interested. But that's okay, because I really need to say this.
Kirk has gotten the voice clips that are going to definitively tell him if Caridian is the same person as Kodos. But they don't, because a machine cannot make the decision. Only he can.
So I guess there's maybe something to be said about the fallibility of machines, but also humans are fallible.
Yeah.
Right?
So what was the point of getting this test if he's just going to discount it anyway?
And from it's sort of what's implied by the Dalek, it's sort of like a 99% match. It's like, it's really, really close, but it's not perfect. So?
I mean, yeah, if you were basing it off of only this one piece of evidence, fine.
Yeah.
When it's just being added to this ever-sized pile of evidence, you have everything you need, you idiot.
Yeah, there's a preponderance of evidence being collected here, and you are just being obstinate and stubborn about not, like, getting started on that whole arresting thing.
Also, way to use preponderance in a sentence.
Yay!
I love it.
I sometimes watch some Law and Order here. So
the Caridian players are about to begin a performance of Hamlet. And hey, McCoy Hamlet is getting ready to leave for the play when he finds Riley missing.
Oh, noes.
He reports to Kirk that Riley probably overheard his really stupid log and is going to go try to kill Kodos because he recorded a really stupid thing about a thing he didn't want Riley to know.
So now, at this point, I was starting to think, maybe McCoy wanted this to happen. Because if Kirk's being this kind of ridiculous and idiotic, maybe McCoy wanted someone to take action that would actually, like, get something moving so Kirk would have to be doing something as well.
I mean, I could believe that if the only motivation we hadn't heard from McCoy thus far was that he really hopes Kirk gets to sleep with that hot 19-year-old.
Good point.
Kirk finds Riley hiding backstage, and despite Riley being absolutely sure that Caridian is Kodos because he's, you know, seen him and he's heard the voice and it's burned into his memory because of this horrible traumatic thing he went through, he is convinced to give up his phaser.
Well, at least Riley understands that maybe shooting Kirk and Kodos right now is probably a bad idea.
Yeah, so at least there's that. This is still very pointless.
Yeah.
Caridian heard Riley arguing with Kirk backstage, and he's now upset that a voice from his past has come to haunt him. Yet, you know, more confirmation about this whole Kodos-y thing.
Yes, a voice haunting me like a ghost. like in this play we're putting on here.
Gee, yeah, some clunky obvious parallels. Who would have thought? Lenore says that he doesn't have to worry because she's already killed all the witnesses. It's fine.
Everything's gonna be good, Dad. Come on, it'll be fine.
And soon she's going to get the last two. Caridian's really upset.
What have you done?
Lenore can't understand why he's not happy, but Caridian says that she was supposed to be the one thing that was left untouched by his past.
Well, you kind of screwed that up, guy.
She sees Kirk. She starts quoting random Shakespeare lines for no real apparent reason at all.
I think that's a panic reaction. It's like, well, I need some last words in case these happen to be it. What are the best ones I know, huh?
Lenore keeps yelling about how she's going to kill people. She grabs a phaser from a guard who just really need to learn to hold on to those things.
I guess having, because this is the future, maybe having some sort of, fingerprint scanner or something like that, so random people can't just grab the gun and actually use it would be kind of useful, but I guess they didn't think of that.
Yep. The Judge Dredd movie has better gun safety than Star Trek.
Yep.
Also, Dredd, really awesome movie that we should probably do on the show sometime.
Okay, let's do that.
She runs onto stage and says that she's going to make the ship into a floating tomb and that the soul of Caridian will give performances among the stars. Doesn't this sound like she's planning to just kill everyone on board? Like, doesn't that what this line implies?
Yeah. You know, I guess she's sort of like, well, the jigs might be up, but maybe they haven't, communicated that, we got a mass murderer on board here. Maybe if I just murder everyone, then all this evidence can be just sort of flushed out, and no, it'll be all the wiser, despite the whole, entire crew being wiped out thing. Anyway.
She tries to kill Kirk, but Caridian jumps in front of him, and Lenore is, has a mental breakdown, keeps quoting Shakespeare, and then says the line of the episode.
Yes.
Then, on the bridge, McCoy reports that Lenore doesn't remember a thing that happened.
That's convenient. I think she's lying.
And I guess he thinks it's supposed to be comforting or something, because he, asks Kirk if he really cared about her, but Kirk ignores him and orders warp. The end.
I think McCoy is then goes oh, that's the answer, going to warp. Just leave the situation behind, pretend it never happened.
Why does McCoy want to vicariously get in the pants of a 19-year-old through Kirk?
Because he has less luck with the ladies, I guess?
I guess. Is it because the only woman we've ever seen him express an interest in turned out to be a salt monster?
Oh, yeah.
Ezix, what did we just see?
We saw Star Trek trying to do some Shakespearean stuff, I think.
Apparently.
No, it's not nearly as good.
They did. They had some really clunky parallels, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
His conscience was caught in a play, like the line says.
But all the stuff sort of relies on their not all the plot stuff kind of relies on them not existing in the future.
On who not existing in the future?
Everybody. Because so this is the future. You got a spaceship. You got all this advanced technology. Got all these things to, verify, advanced technology to scan people from thousands upon thousands of miles away, figure out their what kind of species they are, and you lack the ability to compare one picture of a guy from 20 years ago to the picture of a guy today and figure out if they're the same person or not.
Okay, yeah, it relies on them not having access to any future technology at all.
Yes. And I sort of poked at it's like, well, we should call the space police, right? I guess Kirk is supposed to be acting as the space police here, because apparently there's no planetary authorities here that would want to investigate a murder and keep the Enterprise in orbit. It's like, well, we want to make sure that everyone who was around was not just vanishing on us, and just all these sort of little things that sort of need to not exist temporarily or at all in the setting for this to really kind of work out, which is really kind of awkward.
Well, I guess we've seen in the I, Mud episode, or the Mud's Women episode, they have very little authority.
Yep.
they arrested Mud, and then the miners were just like, nope, he's free.
We're in charge now. Yeah.
But then he was still arrested at the end, I guess. I don't know how, we don't have any information on how justice is supposed to work in this system?
Well, you do know that prisons do exist, because we've been to one.
Yeah, but does Kirk have the authority to arrest someone? Is this wrong? Like, should he not be investigating this person? Because if he has the authority to arrest people, then this is perfectly fine. He can be doing an investigation in order to arrest somebody.
Yeah.
But if he doesn't have the authority, then he's gone rogue.
Rogue Captain Kirk, once again.
Also, I want to point out, this is, I think, every episode so far. The actions of the captain and the crew make absolutely no difference to the plot of the episode.
To a certain degree, yeah. I guess the dearest thing that happens is sort of causing a pinch point at the end that eventually, cause reactions, but not necessarily actions themselves. Because, you know, but if they hadn't done anything, LaLaura would have come after Kirk at some point anyway, so.
Yeah, they also spent, like, the entire episode trying to set up this thing of, like, is Kirk interested in justice or vengeance? What's he gonna do when he discovers that this guy is the person who murdered possibly his family, we don't know. And yeah. Then, instead of him having to make any kind of decision at all, Lenore just goes crazy and starts shooting.
Yep. It's like, well, we have a moral dilemma. We're just gonna not resolve it at all. Yay.
Yeah. Also, I'm uncomfortable with the multi-generational guilt thing that they're doing.
Yeah.
So they had the whole, like, you're supposed to have been untouched by my past, but apparently, because her father is evil, she must also be evil.
Yeah, it might be, she's obviously not someone who is a good person, given that she's, like, super willing to murder people. But you could go into sort of a discussion of nature versus nurture on that one. I think that's kind of irrelevant, honestly.
Yeah, well, they could have been doing some sort of multi-generational trauma thing, which I don't think that I actually done much research on in the 1960s.
Yeah.
He obviously is traumatized by having done this horrible thing, mm-hmm. which makes sense, even though he keeps trying to justify it, which also makes sense.
Yeah, it's like, well, is it easier to deal with a horrible thing you've done by, excusing it or confronting it and, just feeling the guilt.
Yeah, but since he's obviously not dealt with it in any way, like, he probably was not providing the greatest environment for someone to grow up in.
Yeah.
You kind of have to deal with your own past traumas in order to be a, like, effective parent for the most part.
And to a certain extent, though, I do kind of wonder, did he tell his daughter what is up at some point, or did she, like, find out on her own? It's not really explained all how she knows.
It's not explained. It really sounds like she found out, and he's just really shocked and surprised, like, oh no, you were supposed to never know, and now it's, tainted you.
Yeah, and then, which, if she found out, it sort of implies that, either she ran across one of the first people that that she ended up murdering, finds out from them, and then just straight up murders that guy right away, at which point it sort of begs the question, it's like, okay, so obviously this was your reaction as opposed to sort of denial, as the first reaction most people go to, or looking into it and going, holy crap, my dad's a mass murderer, I should probably, like, I don't know, turn him in or something like that. If your first option is murder, and this is the first time you found out that, your father was a mass murderer himself, this might be kind of a red flag that this is not a someone who is particularly well, for whatever definition you want to sort of go with on what that might mean.
Yeah, I feel like they might be trying to do kind of a Macbeth thing with it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he's supposed to be Macbeth, and she plays Lady Macbeth in the thing, so she's actually the one doing the murdering, and she goes crazy because of the murdering. It doesn't work out very well because, Macbeth was this whole, like, the woman behind the throne is pushing the guy to do horrible, horrible things and feels guilty about it. Mm-hmm. And this is the guy committed genocide.
And then she just kind of feels guilty about it for reasons.
Yeah. Like, this is not a sympathetic character. The guy is, like, almost tried to be framed as one in a weird way, but he's definitely, definitely not. He killed thousands of people.
I'll get into some of my thoughts on that when I do the awards a little bit later. But, Kodos slash Caridian is definitely, a bad guy. and is only, you know, is more interested in hiding than being remorseful about it.
Yeah, I feel like they wanted us to do kind of a moral dilemma thing with that. The way that it's weird the way that they frame it, because he could have just been like a genocidal monster, and that would have been fine and worked for what they were doing with this. It would have been exactly the same plot. But instead, they tried to put some kind of like, oh, look, he had some reasons on top of it.
They're crap reasons, but I guess.
Yeah, but it's like they kind of want you. They're trying to do a trolley problem here. They're just failing really badly.
Oh, man.
They really want to do this, like, was it better for him to take action and kill a bunch of people so that some people could live? Or would it be worse to take inaction and let everyone die? Except, you know, not for like a lot of reasons.
We go over my thoughts on the trolley problem in general so far in this series.
I don't think so, though. I guess we should probably, like, anyone not familiar, the trolley problem is you are driving a train car, and on the track ahead of you are five people, and you have the option, because your brakes are out, you cannot stop the train or do anything else. You only have the option to switch tracks onto a track that has one person on it.
My sort of general thoughts are, you can sort of, you know, the you know, proper way to approach a trolley problem of any sort, this one or any of the other sort of variants that sometimes show up, is to, you know, one option is to purposely seek out the worst possible moral options. And then basically do the reverse. this is the only options you got, then obviously the worst option is to go after, to let the trolley continue on forward and to murder the more people, and then you flip it to the reverse. Okay. But if there is more than one option, then you can do things like, I don't know, maybe we derail the trolley and then, you know, we murder everyone on the track as well as the people on the trolley itself. So you get sort of ridiculous possibilities there. The other approach is to reject the trolley problem entirely, which is the way I usually go at it, because, you know, the trolley problem sort of implies that there are constructs within our world that allow trolley problems like this to exist in the first place. And the moral imperative is to prevent the people to be tied down the tracks in the first place. So sort of thinking about this in terms of this particular, episode here, as well as some other things, which I'll, you know, poke on later. You know, so in both these castings, what is the worst possible option for the colony of Tarsus IV? The worst possible option is to kill everyone on the planet and then have all your food for yourself, right? The exact opposite of that is to not kill anyone and then just start to ration, and there are people that are going to die from starvation, but, you know, you're not actively attempting to murder people in some idea of, okay, we only got this much food and we have this exact sort of rundown of, you know, how much we'll be able to survive with, you know, independent of, the rightness or wronging of the murder. It also assumes we know what we're doing, which I don't think anyone would in that situation, given the desperate situation. But the other casting is like, okay, as a governor, you have obviously failed to take actions that would make this sort of famine not be a colony ender. You have allowed a system in place to persist that, has led your people to doom. And as such, if anyone's going to die, it's probably you who should be the first one to go.
Yeah, I agree. So, the fact that he didn't submit himself for the thing,
yeah,
means he doesn't believe in the general premise. Though I think it's an interesting one, because I feel like you fell into the same trap that everyone else does, and that this episode did when it tries to present this kind of thing, which is, this is not supposed to be a moralistic question that you have people answer in order to judge the character of their soul. It is a logic device that you use to demonstrate the different ways to think about morality in a philosophical context.
Yes.
Because if you apply different schools of morality to something like a trolley problem, you get different answers. There's an objectivist who wants to do the least amount of harm in general would switch tracks because, you know, killing one person is better than killing five people. Hey, this is Gepwin from Editing in the Future. I messed up here. I meant utilitarians, not objectivists. Obviously, utilitarians are the ones who want to do the least amount of harm in general as a basic philosophy, and I just didn't want to confuse anyone. Back to the normal show. But someone who has an intentionality would say that, you know, you taking an action makes you more morally responsible for the outcome, so doing nothing is a better scenario, even though it kills more people. You know, there's just, you know, different ways to think about moral philosophy that are demonstrated by this, and everyone just gets hung up on the, well, why can't I do anything? What if I yell really loud? But this particular one, they give us this scenario, and then they start out with it being like he killed a bunch of people. Then they later introduce he killed a bunch of people to save some people from a famine. Instead of just introducing that and being like, you know, maybe he asked for volunteers to be killed to save the rest of the population, or he did it in some kind of good way that makes you, you know, wonder about the morality of his decision making, or, you know, straight up lottery, or, you know, whatever, something that could make you actually wonder about it, even though it's still obviously a horrible decision. He picked people based on his own arbitrary views of eugenics.
So in other words, he was, you know, picking the people that he liked better. Like, you're going to live because I like the cut of your jib, man.
Also, apparently, Riley and Kirk were on this planet. Mm-hmm. I guess went through this process. Because if Kirk showed up later, the only people who show up are like the supply ships. And they say that by the time the supply ships get there, Kodos is dead and burned. Which means Kirk must have been on the planet. Which is implying that he is some sort of genetically superior specimen that Kodos picked out for survival.
Kodos, I think you made a bad decision there.
Not only that, but they're like really subtly implying, like, you know, eugenics bad, but hey, isn't Kirk like great? Look at how he's eugenically perfect.
Guys, your weird mixed messaging, it doesn't work. So just FYI, if folks want to have a more interesting interaction as far as Star Trek goes, of someone who's very sure this someone's a some sort of war criminal, and there's a, you know, interesting back and forth interplay, suss out the truth of the matter, the episode from Star Trek Deep Space Nine Duet is a much, much better episode to sort of go into that sort of exploring that space, because it is very obvious that the bad guy in question is a monster, is a mass murdering, you know, crazy person that, you know, should be, like, put on trial and put away forever, you know, if not worse. And, you know, that episode, you know, focuses way better on the sort of, you know, the mystery of it than this episode does at all.
Yeah, well, DS9 does those things really, really well in general.
Yes. So, just want to point that one out in case, like, well, maybe Star Trek just sort of sucks this kind of plot. Well, they do it better later.
I think that's just the constant theme that we've hit through all of these.
Yep.
They do it better later.
Have we had a salt monster show up again in Star Trek?
We don't have a salt monster. We have weird shape-changing aliens.
True.
That, like, multiple Wesley times, falls in love with, I think.
Oh, yeah, because like, well, you're suddenly huge and large, and the old lady is like, actually some sort of big fuzzy monster.
Yeah, that's a very weird one.
Yeah.
Though so they did have, I guess, some Shakespearean themes. I mean, the title of the episode coming from the line that I'm paraphrasing because I don't have it in front of me, but perhaps the play's the thing to catch the conscience of the king. They caught his conscience with a play. Good job, you did it. You episoded, picked a name, and then you did the thing.
Yeah, I'd say that a lot of the, you know, sort of Shakespearean sort of stuff going on here is more parallels as opposed to super informing the action and plot.
Yeah.
Unless you want to sort of pull it apart that, you know, if Kirk is sort of playing the role of Hamlet, then, you know, it's sort of trying to leverage the, you know, behaviors of the Caridian / Kodos into revealing who he is, as opposed to, well, we've collected some evidence, but because we're being Shakespeare right now, we're not going to actually go with it because we have this other route, which is the only way it has to go forward.
Yeah, and there was, they didn't give you any reasonable justification for why they kept ignoring this mountain of evidence. Where it's like not only in the way that the episode is constructed, but it's just like obvious from the first couple of scenes that this guy is definitely Kodos.
Yeah.
Like, you had a guy who's like, hey, that's Kodos, and I'm going to invite him to a party to prove it. Oh, I'm dead.
So I think at some point Spock should have said, Captain, if you do not order his arrest right now, I'm going to do that. And you can override my order, but I will put in my official report that, you know, et cetera, et cetera, to basically sort of force the issue here. And then, you know, maybe lead that into some sort of interesting interactions between the two of them. Where, you know, Kirk is trying to be overly emotional and Spock's coming back. It's like, no, no, really, come on. But I guess they were saving that to when Spock and McCoy were together. And McCoy's like, I'm getting drunk.
Yeah, McCoy really wanted to be drunk. He's just weird. It's so weird how he's very obsessed with drinking. It comes up a few times. He has like a drinks cabinet in his office. And he just sits there and drinks. And he complains about Spock not wanting to drink. He's definitely an alcoholic.
Spock, come get crunk with me, it'll be great. No sir, come on. Racism. McCoy, you're drunk again. I'm always drunk. maybe anytime we pretend to be McCoy saying something, I should pretend I'm drunk then.
Yeah, I think that's at least it explains him a little bit.
Yeah,
so like very little actually happened in this episode for all the kind of fluff they've had around it.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to come up with anything more to say about anything they were doing. They like accuse the guy. They go into this really horrible, like half your age teenage relationship. They trick them to get on the ship. They like make random accusations and keep ignoring evidence, and they have the play and it all just kind of works out.
Well, I guess everything happened and then we can go on with our lives. Hooray!
Yeah, that's basically it. So I don't know, unless you had any particular...
Well, I guess to a certain extent, this does allow Kirk and the crew sort of off the hook for like having to report anything to the police other than this one lady murdered her dad.
Yeah, so she's getting arrested, but she was crazy, so I guess that's fine.
I don't know. Yeah, this one, as I said, because there was sort of less... stuff going on, it was, you know, easier for me to sort of enjoy as far as just sort of the spectacle of it. But yeah, it's not necessarily a very good episode, but that's sort of my faint praise with the, you know, the sort of the better one so far.
Yeah, I kept waiting for something to happen, and then by the time something happened, it was so stupid I like couldn't get over it. And it just the whole way that they frame the like him hitting on this 19-year-old was very cringy and kind of difficult to ignore.
Now, I will say that once I did date a 19-year-old, but also I was like in my early 20s myself, I think 23, 24 maybe. So it wasn't like that creepy. It was, you know, only a few years age difference. But Kirk, you're like in your 30s, maybe pushing 40 at this point.
Yeah.
Tone it down.
Yeah, once you get into like 35, it's just really, really creepy. Just don't, you know, don't date teenagers unless you are or were very recently a teenager.
Now, if you were like 400 years old, you're dating someone who's 200, that's still a little weird because how'd you live that long? But, you know, it's much less awkward.
Yeah, well, everybody knows like the age range expands the older you get.
Yes, that half your age plus seven.
You have such a developmental difference between those ages. Like, the person that you were when you were, like, 19, early 20s is so different from the person you are in your late 20s.
My person in my late 20s is much different than I am now.
Yes. I don't know. This is just... I realize this was normal in the 60s, but it shouldn't have been, and it shouldn't be being represented as normal in the, you know, 2200s, whenever this is set.
Yes.
And... just because something was normal a while ago doesn't mean we shouldn't point out how horrible it looks now.
Correct. The excuse of, oh, it was the times, is not good enough. So, should I get on to my awards for today?
Awards!
So, my first award is Show Within a Show, because we got plays going on inside the episode here. And in fact, we got two of them. It's not quite television, you know, aliens watching people, you know, that are being watched by people on the Enterprise sort of situation here, but it is sort of a an actual production being presented within the situation. So that's pretty straightforward.
Yeah.
The second award is failure to CSI. We've already kind of covered some of that. It's like, where are the cops? Seriously.
They didn't even have McCoy scan the guy once.
Yeah. It's like, oh, we got a body. I guess we don't do anything with it. We don't even know how he died. So he's just sort of dead. My third award is Clark Kent disguise for Kodo/Caridian, because it's really obvious, guys.
Well, he got older. I mean, people, like, you know, Caridian looked younger. Or, like, he looks older than Kodos. He can't be the same guy. Because, like, he's older, right?
You know, despite 20 years between hand, it can't be the same guy at all, right? You see, you know, Max Hunt wears glasses. Captain Amazing doesn't wear glasses. And my final award is, of course, the Thanos solution for Kodos wanting to murder half of everybody for reasons. And that's always a terrible decision.
Yeah, they keep Thanosing. I guess that's where they got it. So, yeah, it's a very old, very stupid way of thinking that we can't seem to shake for some reason.
I believe Kyle Kalgren did a pretty good take on how ridiculous it is to, like, ever go with that sort of option. Go check him out, guys, if you're interested. But I don't think I have much more to add to it than, yeah, this is just ridiculous.
Yeah, let's even assume for, like, a second that there was a definite way to know that this was going to save the population. Like, you don't get to make that decision arbitrarily for people.
Yeah, that's called being a kill crazy person.
Yes. Yeah. Oh, this was just, I mean, I know it was a little more enjoyable than some, but I still think this was a very horribly made piece of television.
Yeah. It's like, well, it's tolerable as opposed to,
Again, I worry. I'm not as familiar with 60s TV outside of, like, old Hanna-Barbera.
Mm-hmm.
But I really worry about what was on TV around this time, because these things keep being reported as having been reviewed very, very well when they came out.
Yep. I guess in a sort of on that thought there, I have been watching a little bit of The Prisoner recently, because I've never actually watched the more than a few clips here and there of the series. And though it does have a sort of some head scratcher moments, it's quite easy to sort of point out that a lot of the, ridiculous and kind of stuff going on is very much a, wow, this is a ridiculous situation, and it's being showcased in a this is not a good thing sort of a vibe, which, it's like, okay, so it's actually trying to teach the audience, like, all the people manipulating and being like this is actually a bad thing, so don't do that, please.
That can't be right. I don't think that's right. All right, well, next time,
I must say,
next time we get into a really actually kind of famous episode that I think I remember.
This one about
is the Balance of Terror.
Oh yeah, that one. I think I've seen that one too. In fact,
I believe this is the first introduction of the Romulans,
mm-hmm.
which is like the third alien species we will have encountered.
Yes,
really ripping along there. Now, this one is kind of really called out a lot for having a lot of Cold War parallels and theming, so that'll be kind of interesting to take a look at.
Yes. So we're going to go back to the Cold War era for this one. So get in your bunkers and get your canned goods together, because it might be a rough time. Might all end up dead.
Yes, great. And while you're in that bunker, you can join us next week on Watches of Tomorrow, where we will be covering Star Trek Original Series episode The Balance of Terror.
Oh, one more thing before we go, though. One more thing. I was looking at the trivia for the Conscience of the King, and this is apparently when McCoy's skull shows up in his cabinet for the first time. So obviously, McCoy is drinking to forget the murders. He got those skulls.
We solved it.
I've cracked the case. Next time on Watchers of Tomorrow, we discover that not all space elves are friendly. You have been listening to Watchers of Tomorrow, a podcast on science fiction media. find and follow Watches of Tomorrow on Podbean, YouTube, Spotify, iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Pocket Cast, Spreader, Digital Podcast, and perhaps many more to come. If you enjoy our podcast, make sure to subscribe for more. And where possible, make sure to rate your experience or leave us a review. You may find Gepwin on youtube.com/Gepwin and Twitter at Gepwin. You may find me, Dr. Izzix, on youtube.com/Dr. Izzix and Twitter at IzzixLP. Music is Waveform and Mori's Principle, both by DRKRN. You can also check out the Watchers of Tomorrow Discord channel. Make sure to share the experience with your friends, family, enemies, and alien overlords. If you feel you are suffering from transporter syndrome, please be aware that the next time you step off the transporter, that you, that is now, no longer exists.